Off the Ball, GAA.
I think it's just interesting seeing how maybe sometimes male coaches think or perceive how women want to receive feedback.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join. The Koigig Pod on Off the Ball in association with Cadbury, official snack partner of the Republic of Ireland women's national team.
Katie McCabe, a huge, huge goal.
Very proud of the team's performance.
We're going to go out there to beat them. We're going to try and beat them.
Hello and welcome to the latest and also the last episode of the Koigig podcast before Christmas. But never fear, we got some good news this week that we will be continuing into the new year and beyond, thanks to all your lovely support. So unfortunately, we won't be doing quite the year that we wanted to do, but we're still going to have a lot of fun. We're going to have a lot of great interviews with all the Irish players that are playing in the WSL and the Championship coming up in the new year. So do stay tuned for that. But for now, we're going to look at our final weekend of the WSL before a nice long Christmas break, not back until the end of January. And to do that, I am joined by Shamrock Rovers' Scarlett Heron and, of course, Karen Duggan. How are we, guys?
We are good, getting festive.
It's that
winding
time of year.
Down at work. Yeah.
No. We should have all wore Christmas hats for the last one.
Yeah,
that's a good one, Scarlett. Actually, I should have. I would have loved the idea of forcing Karen as she sits in work to wear a Christmas hat, and especially because that's a glass door behind you, isn't it?
I'd do it. I think I just had my last client call where I could do my last and have a Merry Christmas.
Oh, very
nice. That's the best feeling. That is the best feeling.
I know. I feel like the only thing I've said this week is basically and if I don't see you before Christmas, have a lovely one. but sure, it's that time of year. I've been off since last Thursday. It's the first time in years that I've just had the run into Christmas free, apart from this lovely podcast, of course. And it's nice to actually be able to sit back and soak it all in. I feel like when you're a kid, you do the plays and the choir services, and then you become an adult and it's just a couple of nights of drinking, and then you don't actually get to do all the fun Christmassy things. So it's been nice. But you guys are already looking ahead to the new season. Some fixtures out. How are we feeling?
Tired.
You can't say that already, Karen.
No, obviously, it's quite an intense fixture list when you factor in the All-Ireland Cup and the FAI Cup. So it's dependent on how you get on with those. But obviously, it kind of gets you focused, gets you thinking about what's to come. And all that fun pre-season that we have to kick into in January. But look, it's a good thing, a new team in the league, Waterford this year. So be interesting to see how they get on and how they can kind of develop and if they'll rival Wexford down there and they'll have kind of that southeast battle. So, yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing what they do kind of to pull their squad together. And like always, there's going to be loads of movement between now and the start of the season. So it's always hard to call. You're looking at the first round, though, really, Scarlett.
We have Shell's first and last game of the season, which is lovely.
That's built it up. Kind of excitement.
I'm not going to say it's a fix, but is that kind of let's build it up and then let's build the anticipation?
I think we have Shell's, Galway and Athlone inside the first four. So nice, easy start for us.
Well, you'll know where you're at after the first few games.
That's true.
Really?
I suppose it's the same as every year. There'll be no room for any team to start slow.
No.
I think that was our issue last year. We couldn't get a win to start. We drew the first four or five games, and then you're double guessing yourself, I suppose. So yeah, no room for any sort of lapses this year for anyone. It's quick, as it always is. It's quick. There's a lot in there, very jam packed. So everyone has to be ready come March 8th, I think.
Has the All Ireland Cup added an extra level of kind of? I will obviously work into the whole thing, and I know, Karen, we talked about it before, and you said it's a good opportunity at times to give players who maybe don't get the same sort of run out a bit of a time on the pitch and see where they're at. But in terms of loads for teams, has it added much more? I know the travel is kind of one aspect because you obviously have to go up north as well.
Yeah, I think so. Just simply because we're still an amateur league, you play your games, you have Sunday, then you get up, you go to work or you go to school or you do this, your recovery is never as good. And you can't really factor in a 2 week holiday now because obviously the All Ireland Cup kind of fills those spaces as well. So you don't really get as much downtime as we would have previously. So that's why I think not only is it important in terms of squad morale, but in order to manage people like me's load, who, you know, all those games, they're going to add up. And we found that last season we had a poor preseason in terms of injuries. And like Scarlett said, if you hit that bad patch and it's a run of games, it rules you out. So I guess it's good in terms of squad balance, but generally it does. Well, I find that it adds load. Scarlett might feel different. Like it's good in a way, and it's good to play against different teams because we're so used to each other now, that it's hard to kind of keep up the intensity of the rivalries in a way. And there's always so much change, that it's good to freshen things up. But yeah, I do find it a bit difficult because you're adding training weeks as well as matches.
How do you find it, Scarlett? Because not to make Karen
Because
feel
you're
bad, you
younger.
guys
Go
are
on,
at very
say
different stages of your
it.
careers.
Yeah.
Oh, I think what Karen says accurate. Like it is very with the league fixtures as well. There's sort of no breaks at all. But I think the overall idea of the All Ireland was a good thing. Like I think the concept of it's positive, and obviously you're trying to encourage sort of an all it is an All Ireland competition. So you're obviously taking the northern teams into it, which is good. I think though, if you come down to traveling, you have maybe the likes of like, I don't know, Cork getting drawn for like Glentoran or something, and it's like a massive trek up. Now, I don't think that's happened yet. Like there hasn't been like a really big one, a really big travel day, I don't think, in that competition. But I don't know. I think you can only avoid it for so long. But yeah, I think it does offer an opportunity for maybe like people to get a chance as well. Like if you win your first two games, you're automatically going to be through, like more than likely. So you're looking at that last game in the group as like a chance for other players. And similarly, if you're a team who's not as strong in the league and you might lose the first of your two games, then you also have a chance to sort of rotate and give other players a chance. But yeah, I think it is a positive thing. I think the one thing, it could be more condensed. I'm just looking here, like there's two games straight after each other in the group stage, but then when it gets to the semi-final, it's played on the end of July, and then the final's not till the very last day of August on the 31st, so that's a bit of a gap. I think maybe if it was a more condensed, I know in the first year there was the World Cup, so it kind of happened in like one massive period. I'm not sure if that would be a good thing to continue with or not. I don't know how it worked the first time for most teams, but it could be something to look at. I don't know. I'd say there's trialing which way is better, like prolonged around like throughout the season or in one like five, like 4 week block or something. I don't know.
Well, Karen, you played it in the first time around with the World Cup, and it kind of at the time we weren't even sure if it was going to continue on as a competition because it was seen as an opportunity to make sure that anyone who was playing in the league back here that still enjoy the World Cup, and if there was an opportunity to go to the World Cup, that was there, but also that you weren't losing fitness or you weren't losing that kind of match sharpness in between.
Yeah, I think maybe the way it is now is decent because, well, it depends on how you're approaching it. If you're someone like me, I am going to use that maybe to take a break. Whereas if you're someone who's targeting that competition to go and win it, your attitude's going to be different and you'd want to have a good run at it. And if you're a player that's in and out, it could be difficult to motivate yourself or balance it. I think it's one of those things, like you say, it's depending on where it is on your priority list as a team. Obviously, you look at Galway and they've had success, and I think they've grown from that. And I think it does kind of breed something when you get that first win in a competition. So, it's completely up to how your team approaches that competition and if they're going all out for it. You're taking a risk in terms of load. And if you're not going all out for it, you're giving up the chance to possibly go and win something. It's a difficult one to have a holistic kind of view on it. I think it's very much a personal stage of your career. What team you're part of is kind of how you view it. I think in time, it could be a good thing if the league ever grows big enough to have a two-tier system, that it becomes an all-Ireland two-tier system. But I think we're quite a bit off that at the moment. You know, we're still a relatively small league. I was always a big fan of maybe doing a third round of league fixtures, maybe where you split the top and the bottom, just because, like you say, if you lose the first two or three games, it's very hard to claw it back. And that's not kind of like a realistic representation of your team of that season, like just because it is so short, and injuries and things like that come into play. So that's where I'd like to see it go, but I think that's a while off. My ideal thing would be more teams, possibly an all Ireland two-tier system, and then get a third round of league fixtures. You just have to be very conscious, like Scarlett said, of travel and that we're amateur and all this comes into play. So that's for the head of women's football and for whoever is involved there in the FAI, but not us.
There's still a bit of a TBD around that one. Well, we possibly would have seen some changes in the All-Ireland Cup if we had qualified for the Euros, but sadly that did not happen.
No.
But we did get our groups this week. So quick run through in case people haven't seen them. Group A is Switzerland, Norway, Iceland, Finland, which I think is kind of generally appreciated as the nicest group out of them all. Group B, Spain, Portugal, Belgium, and Italy. Group C, Germany, Poland, Denmark, and Sweden. And then Group D, which would have been the one we would have been in, France, England, Wales, Netherlands, which, I mean, considering we've played France and England twice in the last year, Netherlands, I know we don't know a whole bunch about the more recent team, but definitely the toughest group out of the four, you have to say, Scarlett.
Oh yeah, I mean you kind of look at it, and I don't know if it's like a sigh of relief or what it is that we don't have to face them, but you'd want to be there. And I think the way to look at it would have been like, what an opportunity to be playing these three teams at a major tournament. Like obviously we had Australia in the first game at the World Cup, and the crowd that was attracted to that game, and obviously the attendance figures on TV and stuff, and the hype around the whole game like was massive. So I think we would have seen something similar back home in terms of like how many people got into it. If you're playing the likes of, I don't know, if you're playing Italy in your first game, it's not going to be as monumental as if you're playing England. Like I think that would have been huge, for the two teams like England and Ireland to be playing each other in a major tournament. Obviously, we wouldn't have seen it before on the women's game, but yeah, it's a pity, and it's a pity for probably Wales as well. They'll do well to get anything out of that group. But here, you never know. It's the magic of tournaments at the end of the day. You never really know what will happen. But yeah, I think everyone's probably watching that yesterday going, oh, I wish we were there sort of thing. So yeah, it's a pity.
It would have been quite a like continuation of it seems to be just our general fate of ending up in these groups and these pathways that are very, very difficult to qualify out of or to, go up against. But I suppose providing the experience we had, at least we would have had a bit going into that one. I'm interested to see who comes out of that one. I saw a lot of places predicting England and Netherlands, but I don't know if you can ever really write off France in
Yeah,
these
they're so
groups.
unpredictable. But I also feel like they were almost building something as well when we were playing them. They did a bit of squad rotation. I'd say they very much had one eye on getting more players in and used to it and blooded for this competition. So I wouldn't rule them out. But yeah, the Netherlands have looked very impressive. And it's obviously, in terms of ambition of getting out of the group, it's really tough for Wales. But if you were sitting in the Welsh FA, you're looking at the number of eyes that are on the Wales versus England game, and you're thinking, wow, this is going to just be the be all and end all in the country. Like you'd imagine everyone would be watching it. So that's a big positive for them. It was going to be hard for them to get out of any group. So in terms of what it can do, in ter like or just focus on the team and hopefully getting a backing. I think that that's a big thing, because that's what we were talking about, the World Cup and the bounce it would have in terms of participation. That's where Wales are now. So I hope that that is helpful to them in some way, because it's not going to be nice for them on the field.
No, definitely not. And especially when you look at, say, what England did against Northern Ireland whenever they played them in the last Euros, it seems to be a bit of a trend for them in these sort of major tournaments to go up against either Northern Ireland or Wales or Scotland and not do too well with them. Bit of concern as well on our perspective with the fact that Scotland have also got rid of their manager in the last week or so and are now going to provide a bit of competition for the few names that are out there that could potentially go to a nation of that size and I suppose a team that would have players of fairly similar calibers. So it'd be interesting to see how that kind of progresses over the next couple of weeks. As long as they don't take like Carla Ward or something off us, I'll be happy enough.
Is that who your money's on?
It's who my heart is on, but I don't think I would be putting any money near it. You know, I think
Yeah. You're not
someone
the
like
only one who's going
her.
to be putting money near the Irish women's job, I'd
If there's any donors out there that want
say.
to contribute to the fund, let us know. No, I think, I don't know, I would just like to see them go for someone exciting. And I think she'd be really interesting. There's been a lot of reports that she.
When you share your food, you share your heart. So what's on your table this holiday season? Save on your festive feast at Kroger with delicious deals on all the holiday classics. Or wow the crowd with something new, like a quinoa-stuffed butternut squash. It's sure to add a pop of color to your spread. How about a sweet potato casserole with a crunchy oat streusel topping? Made with care for the sweet tooth and the savory tooth. With Kroger, fill your table with love and watch as your guests' hearts get as full as their bellies. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
Life can throw a lot your way in the morning. You might be battling drop-off times, while your kids are battling imaginary monsters or their shoelaces. But no matter what life brings, Life cereal puts a smile on everyone's face. With 24 grams of whole grains and unexpected sweetness in every serving, it's sure to please even the pickiest eaters. Help start your mornings with Life cereal.
I really love my life.
Is interested in an international job. You know, I think she would put a lot of effort into it with it, especially with it being her first one and having been out of management for a couple of months. So, yeah, I just think someone like that would be quite cool to see at the helm of Ireland and to see what they could do, and having that outside voice come in. But in terms of who I actually think they're going to get, all bets are off. I mean, there's no one. I was listening to the lads talking off the ball about how if Stephen Kenny hadn't got the men's job, the last time out, Stephen Bradley would probably be a sure in this time around, if it wasn't for Hymer. And I was like, there isn't really, I don't think, anyone in the league here who, or anyone
No.
coaching in the league that you would take on in that position. So you're almost definitely looking abroad. And then,
Well, I think it has to be someone with professional experience anyway.
yeah.
You know, we were kind of talking about when Eileen got it, like Eileen's done it all and been it all, but at a professional level, her experience was actually quite limited. So, I think it has to be someone who has that bit on their CV.
Yeah, well, we shall see what happens. Hopefully, we won't be waiting as long as we were for Hymer to come around. Turning our attention to the Women's Super League, Scarlett, you have done us the honors of our final team of the week for the season.
That's it. Yeah. Obviously, a few surprise results this weekend. So, in goal, Janina Letzig of Leicester, then two centre halves of Sarah Holmgaard and Maya Letizia, right back Julie Tabod, left back. Oh, sorry, I've gone wrong here. Anyway, Megan Finnegan then the back four as well. Then in the midfield, Vicky Losada and Grace Clinton gets in after last week. Then we have Vivian Assay on the left. We have Andriana Leone on the right. Kenza Daly in the 10 position, and then Alessia Russo up front.
Alessia Russo is back, scoring
Yeah.
goals, loving life, finally.
Yeah, well, I mean, she always has that contribution in terms of work rate and ethic. We kind of were just like, is she's not that out and out striker who's just in the box scoring goals like your Bunny Shaw or whatever. But when the team is playing well, she will get goals, and they're slowly creeping their way into that territory where they steadily seem to be improving. Obviously, it was a tough enough test this week for them. But yeah, Russo, just right place, right time. That's what you want. Yeah, it's a good team, and obviously a lot of new faces in there. For me, Leipzig as well. I remember when we first started the podcast and Leipzig went on loan to Leicester, and we kind of said she is the reason that they stayed up. And it's just the value of having an unbelievable goalie. And that's what Everton and Leicester have, possibly over other people. So yeah, she was brilliant. And We mentioned it as well before in a couple of weeks, Vicky Losada kind of coming into her own because she's got better players around her or players that suit her style of play, and she's just becoming so prominent in that Brighton midfield. And then one of our firm favourites when she's not injured was Kenza Daly, and you're wondering if she can be the thing that can turn things around for Villa, because they badly need something. But yeah, good names to see in there. And ones we haven't seen for a while, but we do like talking about.
Scarlett, who was the standout performer for you?
I think Cara mentioned there, Kenza Daly. I think under Depay, she was kind of in and out, playing out wide, not really too involved in the sort of in the play or not getting forward much, just not producing what she can and what she did at the weekend. So seeing her in a more central position, I think, was really key. So obviously got a golden assist and was brilliant all game. So yeah, I think for me that was she was probably the standout player, and it just kind of shows that players mightn't suit certain managers. Obviously Sean Goder in there got a good first win in the WSL. So yeah, I'd say Villa'll be looking very positively towards the future. Obviously they need to appoint a full-time manager, but it's a good start for them without Depay. So yeah, apart from that, I thought obviously Leicester and Everton holding out good results as well. So a few representations from them in the defence and in goal there as well. So yeah, great results for them. And yeah, I think Andrea Leone as well for Villa was really, really good outright. Scored two great goals as well. So yeah, really positive stuff from Villa at the weekend, and obviously from Leicester and Everton as well.
Apologies to anyone who's watching this on YouTube, but had to deal with my sneezing fit during the middle of Scarlett's very good analysis there. Is this the first time we've ever had a team that doesn't have a single Man City or Chelsea player in it? I think it might be in the history of
I would
TV.
think so. I would think so. There's never been a weekend where they've both done a bit of a bottle job on it. And it's, you know what? It's lovely to see.
We appreciate it. Well, I
Yeah.
think it is interesting though that like they both went at the same time, and normally you would kind of have one player in there that, you know, played out of their skin compared to all the rest, but you couldn't even really say that this week about either side. You know, there was definitely players from other teams that deserved it more, and it, as Karen says, it's very nice to see a team that doesn't have either of them in, and one
Well,
Arsenal
they
sneaking
both
in.
conceded goals. We're so used to seeing them score loads and loads of goals, and we don't really have to concentrate on their defenses that much. But very surprised to see them both conceding goals, and particularly Man City. They left themselves quite open. I don't know if it was complacency or what it was, but Everton could have had another couple.
Well, of all the teams that you would expect it to happen against, I don't think Everton was the one. You know, you could
No.
see, I don't know, Crystal Palace putting in an absolutely stunner of a performance, or maybe like Leicester against Chelsea, not mad surprising. But yeah, definitely not Everton with the way they've been going. But we will get into all of that in a few moments when we turn our attention to the games properly. But Scarlett, you've also been doing a little tactical look at Manchester United for us this weekend.
Yeah, so I think we've been quite negative about Man United the last few weeks, mainly at their sort of
How much money
governance,
did
maybe.
Karen pay you to say
Karen Penny, yeah.
that?
No, I did it. No, this is all it's all my own back, my own doing. So yeah, and they're obviously not been the best going forward either, but defensively they've actually been rock solid. So that's what this is. This is Man United's defence and how they've kept 7 clean sheets this year out of 10 games. So quite impressive stuff. They've only conceded 3 goals, which is was against Chelsea, Arsenal and Brighton, I think. 1 goal in each, so they've not conceded more than 1 goal a game in any game, which is quite impressive. And I actually found an interview of Mark Skinner towards the start of the year. Obviously he's got a bit of backlash the last few seasons, but in fairness he has some quite regimental in terms of their defense. So basically a few points from him was just he wants to be able to trap the opponent, and he can see that in the way that Man United do press. Like if you look at their goal against Palace the weekend, it came from Lee Galton. If you've seen it, started at the halfway line, the ball was played back through a few Palace players, and there's no one with Galton. She just runs straight, and she closes down the goalkeeper. Obviously, the keeper does well initially. Probably should just clear it, but it tries to pass the centre half. And then I think it's Ferreira then intercepts the clearance from the defender, and Grace Clinton has a lovely finish in the right corner. So yeah, I think by the start of the move, there was no players even in Palace's half. And then by the end of it, there was five United players in and around the Palace box. So yeah, I think that's kind of the key to their sort of defensive success, is their press from the front. They're really quite effective in it, and it can vary. Obviously, Clairlin sort of runs the line for them quite well. And you can kind of see, like, in games like Palace, where you'd kind of be targeting maybe a few players in their defence to make sort of errors like you would have seen at the weekend. And then you can also see against Liverpool, they kind of, like, Clairlin is constantly looking over her shoulder. If she sees that no one's with her, she'll stop, and they'll sort of come back into maybe a lower block. But it's sort of that call from maybe a midfielder to go, someone's with you, and Terland will go, and then Galton will go, and Clinton will go, and Ferreira will go. And it's like all as a team. And obviously there's basic stuff when it comes to pressing, but they do it in a really effective way. And they always say, like, your defense starts from the front. So I think United are quite good at sort of pinning teams in their own half and getting a few goals from maybe defensive errors that they can cause. So yeah, I think it's testament to the sort of defence that they have, and obviously they have a consistent back four as well, which I think really helps. Back five include Joyce and goal, but I think Letizia, Toulouse, Joyce and Turner have all played 100% of the minutes this year as well. And if that, like, triangular three of your defence is solid, with your goalkeeper and your two centre halves, so I think it's a recipe for success. So I think that's really key as well, having that sort of consistency. And yeah, just having that aggression, but also that sort of patience in when you can't go, you have to stay. But also trigger points such as, like, a bad pass, a bad touch, you go in flocks. So yeah, I think it's just really, really interesting to see. Like, obviously they might be a bit weaker going forward, but when it comes to actually trying to defend, they've been really successful this year. So.
Well, you've excellently picked up on something Karen has tried to point out several times whenever we have talked about United over the last couple of weeks. So I'm sure she'll be very happy about that.
Well, yeah, I was just while Scarlett was doing that, I was just looking up the number of goals they conceded this time last year, and it was like six or seven games they were conceding in, as opposed to it being the opposite way around. And just inconsistency, and like it's the basis of everything. I still think sometimes they look a bit vulnerable on the counter, but when they get the press right and they box teams in, they're very good. And like I say, I think Leah Galton has been key to that, her coming back into form. She's like big and strong and aggressive, and when she's running at you, you are going to be like, oh God. And Clinton is that kind of aggressive midfield player that they didn't have. I mean, Ella Toon, she's good in the pockets, but that wouldn't be her strong point. And alongside Terland, then you've got kind of three big strong girls, and JC as well when she gets going. So yeah, nightmare for defense if teams can kind of play around that. Fair play to them, but Janssen, she's also been quite disciplined as well there for sweeping things up and allowing those girls to do in that press. So while it might not be like team of superstars, I think that the balance of the team is getting a little bit better in that regard. Against the big teams, I think they'll still struggle because they'll beat that press a little bit. But for now, you'd have to say, they're going in the right direction, which is maybe at a slower pace than a fan would like to see, but maybe it is the right direction defensively anyway.
Well,
Still
all
like to
you
see a
need
bit
is,
more in
like,
attack.
someone in there that can start scoring regular goals, and then,
That's the hardest thing to find in football, though, isn't
Yeah,
it?
no, that's true. I was just trying to be optimistic for you heading
No,
into
I am. I'm optimistic.
the
Thanks for that, Scarlett. Like, I feel like that was a Christmas gift.
Setting you off on the right note for Christmas.
Yeah, exactly.
What we need.
I
Okay,
think
so
they
we
do have.
will.
Sorry.
Oh, no, Scarlett, go ahead if you have something else to
No,
say.
I was just going to say, I think they do have a good base. Like, obviously, their goal scorer, their lack of a goal scorer, but I think. Sir Alex Ferguson said, attacks win you league, win you games, defence wins you league. So I know they're not winning any leagues and mightn't anytime soon, but it's a good start, is what I'm trying to say.
Good start. And Ella Toon should be
Yeah.
back after Christmas, so she should
Yeah.
hopefully contribute to the goals, and hopefully they'll have Grace Clinton on a new contract.
Karen's like, if I could just get
Got a
that under
petition.
my Christmas tree, that would be great. Thanks.
Yeah, massively.
Okay, so we've turned and looked at some of the other games from the weekend, and we'll start with Chelsea Leicester, since that was the first game. And finally, we see a bit of a crack in the armor that has seemed like a pretty invincible Chelsea. Maybe there's something mad, like 81 touches in the Leicester area, and we're only able to get that one goal. Karen, was this a fine Leicester performance, or was this Chelsea stuttering a little bit?
I think it was a fine Leicester performance. I'll give them credit where it's due. I mean, yeah, they got those touches in the box, but when you saw how disciplined Leicester were, a lot of teams, you know, they tire and they give away stupid free kicks, and they know how dangerous Chelsea can be, particularly with Ramirez and stuff there. And they didn't do a huge amount of that, you know, like you'd be used to seeing games where the possession is so one-sided that the opposition will give away loads of frees and get loads of yellow cards. I think they got two yellow cards in the game. So I think it was really, really disciplined. And sometimes it's just so hard to play against that blanket defense. And Chelsea just left themselves open. It was like what happened with Everton when they got their first point on the board. They got a good early goal, and it just gives you that extra something to fight for. Obviously, Leicester were at home, different type of pitch for Chelsea. They probably still should have done better, but they weren't clinical, you know, for all the possession and all the shots they have. It's not something we're used to seeing. And when you have a chance, was it the last minute? Was it Caneret or one of them skied it over the
Yeah.
bar? Just going to be one of those days. Really was just one of those days for Chelsea. But again, something for Leicester to build on. I think we should stick to that kind of route when they're playing against any of the top half of the table teams, because they've shown that they can be very effective at it.
Yeah, and Scarlett, you have to look as well with Leicester. You know, they're not even a fully fit team at the moment. You like they've had a couple of long-term injuries. They have like Judo Ratalo, who scored the most goals for them last season. Lena Peterman is still out. You had Nomi Musin, who did her ACL in October. Chutnet also wasn't fit, and neither was CJ Bosch, was not fit for the match day squad. You had one of their midfielders, Takarada, leading the line. It wasn't as if this was even a fully fit Leicester team that were raring and ready to go. You know, they were patched up.
Yeah, and I think even just seeing here, Deanne Rose came off in like the 10th minute, with through an injury as well. So, yeah, probably very little luck for Leicester in terms of injuries, but I think that point will be huge for them. I can't tell if it's bad timing or good timing, and obviously the Christmas break gives them a chance to maybe them players to rehab a bit more and maybe get back fit in time for the restart after Christmas. But at the same time, they'll be delighted with that win. Or sorry, not that win, that draw, be huge for them. So that's them 1 point safe. So it's really them and Palace who are struggling down the bottom now. Obviously that Everton win jump sort of left them up a bit. So yeah, I think it was a really good result for Leicester. Like defensively, quite good. Like didn't leak any goals. Like Chelsea had, I think 28 shots or something. And obviously, Leipzig and goal was really good. But I think Leicester did defend well. As Karen said, probably leaked a few too many free kicks, and I think there was like 20 corners as well. So it's not like Chelsea didn't have chances. But yeah, it wasn't their day. It wasn't Chelsea's day, but Leicester took advantage of that. You have to, you know, you have to be able to.
We're all going to be left in suspense now as to what you have to be able to do.
That's okay. In the meantime, I guess we go to the other
Yeah.
surprise of the weekend.
Yeah, why not?
I mean, Man City, Everton, thought for me, I was like foregone conclusion here.
I think everyone thought that. Like,
Yeah.
if I had to predict this match, I would have said like 5-6-0 to City.
Yeah. And the form they're in, and just the style of play that they have against an Everton who, you know, they're prone to mistakes, and how quick the likes of, you know, City have been to capitalize on anyone who's given them a sniff. But yeah, I think complacency just like snuck in a little bit, left themselves a little bit exposed. You know, and an 8 minute window, they conceded those two goals, and they could have had another one before Hayashi's goal in the 39th minute. And you know, they dominated possession. They dominate possession in every game. I don't think it really matters who they're playing against. They do dominate possession. But is this a sign that they're overly reliant on Bunny Shaw? I don't know.
Well, is that not a thing that we've said before, that we've complimented them for the fact that they do have lots of options in there? And yes, she is great for popping up and getting a couple of goals, but also you wouldn't be entirely surprised to see it from other parts of the pitch either. Scarlett, I don't know if you think that the City are too reliant on Bunny Shaw and that's why things went south for them at the weekend against Everton, or I was so excited. I was like, after the Chelsea game, I was like, this is great. You know, we're going to have a bit more competition. And then flipping delighted for Everton, but I'm also like, come on, City, give us something.
Yeah, I think that's what everyone was probably thinking when Arsenal, when Chelsea dropped points, sorry. But yeah, I think to be reliant on Bunny Shaw is not a great thing. Like, you still have Mary Fowler in her place. Like, it's not as if you're bringing in some like player who hasn't played WSL, like in WSL, or has no experience and is like known to be a bit of a liability. You're bringing in a world class player. So there's really no excuse for it, really. Obviously you're missing Lauren Hemp as well, and we've spoke about her a lot of times and how much that'll affect City. And I think this week is probably the first week we've actually seen it affect them in a negative way. But yeah, I think it's all credit to Everton. I thought their performance was brilliant. Obviously the first goal, I thought that ball by Højbjerg was class. It was brilliant. And the City defence was maybe just a little bit too open for Hope to just kind of walk through the middle of the two centre halves and knock it in. Really poor defensively from City, but obviously a great ball in and a great finish to get them under, to get them up and running, like. So yeah, and then as Karen said, getting another quick goal after that, and 2-0 is a difficult deficit to come back from, and City were just too late with the comeback. That goal 10 minutes earlier, that penalty might have changed the game. But yeah, really, really good from Everton, and they'll be absolutely buzzing with that. And I think after the hardship of the last few weeks, I think the person who deserves that one the most is probably Courtney. We're delighted for her, I'd say.
Yeah, definitely. She's put in a shift over the last couple of weekends and weeks for club and country. So nice for her to go into the Christmas break with a positive story. Look at Arsenal Liverpool as well, because obviously we had that shock result between Liverpool United, where Liverpool just seemed to absolutely capitulate, and then this game. You were wondering how Matt Beard was going to come back into it. And he had a lot of praise for Sleggers at Arsenal, both before and after the game, which I thought was interesting. He seems to be a great man for pointing out what his opposition is doing well. But Liverpool seemed to find their feet a little bit more this week, Scarlett, and also probably should have had one or two goals in this game.
Yeah, I mean, they had a good few chances, like, and I think
Olivia
Olivia Smith,
Smith, one in particular, you would have thought.
yeah, that's a game changer, like. But yeah, probably unlucky for Liverpool this week, coming against the Arsenal side in form and just couldn't find the net to sort of have that change in the game. And then obviously the goal, it's just awful defending. Like, it's across, like, I think McCabe must have scuffed it. I think that was the one where she threw the Luke Shield bottles to the side and then scuffed at the cross, and it ended up falling to Russo. But yeah, a really, really poor defending. That's basics. Like, if you're in this league and you want to succeed, if you're in any league in the world, you have to be able to defend simple set pieces like that. And it's not like it was some brilliant move by Arsenal, goes back post, back into the middle, great finish. It's simple, simple clearances, like. And it is unfortunate for them, because I think they would have got something out of the game if not for that early goal. So yeah, had their chances, wasn't their day. But yeah, I think they can take a good few positives from it, apart from obviously the disappointing loss. So
All seas of change for Aston Villa at the moment. Cairn, Robert DePauw out there. Allegations about some inappropriateness with players, which there hasn't been any full reports or statements on yet. So we're just waiting to see what happens there. But new manager bounce, Sean Gotter coming in. Very important 3-1 win for them over West Ham. It means that they're above West Ham, Everton, and Liverpool now, which is a big boost for them.
yeah, huge. And finally, a result that reflected their performance. I think it's been coming for a while. And West Ham were on a bit of a good patch as well. So I think it's a really, really good result for Villa. And Look, we don't know what's going on behind the scene. It could be a new manager bounce, or it could be a getting rid of an old manager bounce. We'll obviously have to wait and see what comes out of the woodwork here. But it was, we spoke about the Daily Dally link up for the whole of the 2023 season. And if you can get more of that, then they'll get goals and just need a better supply to someone like Rachel Daly. And I think that she'll get that now. And obviously with Leon joining in, like Scarlett said earlier, like they have all the ingredients. Like that's why we were bigging them up so much before the last season. But they just need to put it all together. And they're a team I'd like to see go on a run and kind of keep the momentum going that they had the last couple of years and entice more players into the team, because I do think that they've got a good setup, a nice style of play and stuff. So hopefully this is the start now for them, and the break doesn't kind of stilt that for them.
Yeah, hopefully it's more just giving them time to go in with a positive result, kind of build on that rather than it stopping any progress. And then finally, we have Brighton and Tottenham. I won't lie, I was going into this game and not looking forward to it at all because I think the two sides have such a similar style of play that I was like, is this just going to be a really annoying possession based, everyone passing it around, and we're not going to really learn anything about either side. But Scarlett, I think there were some things to take away. I mean, you had players on your team of the week from the game.
Yeah, I think overall, I think Brighton were the better side throughout the 90 minutes. Obviously, the goals kind of came late, and obviously they went 1-0 down, but I think they wasted an awful lot of chances. I think Eleanor Heaps' goal for Tottenham had the easiest day of her life, even though she made a good few saves, but they were all straight to her. There was no, I don't know, there was no great power accuracy in the shots, and like they were getting opportunities and just not really taking them, or kind of half chances. But yeah, I think Tottenham will probably be the happiest team of the two to come away with a draw, obviously away from home as well. But yeah, it was kind of just, it was, I don't know, I think for Brighton you'd be really disappointed with that. I mean, I would have said they were the better of the two sides. I don't know what you think, but I think especially in that second half I thought they were quite good, so I'm not sure. Yeah, I'd be really disappointed if I was from Brighton, to be honest, and I think it's a good point on the road for Spurs.
Yeah, I totally agree. I mean, like Kathleen said, Spurs aren't a team I look forward to playing in terms of their football style. Sometimes I like the chaos of them, but not in terms of what happens for football. Again, they have a great striker there that they don't feed enough to, because I don't know what their style of play really is. But yeah, Brighton were the better team, and showed why they had such a strong start to the season, but kind of uncharacteristic to the how they started the season. They weren't clinical, because like you said, they did have quite a number of chances, but again, it's just leaving it too late. I think that they thought that they'd go on and win that second half just because they were kind of dominating, and then left themselves open a little bit.
Yeah, I would agree with what the two of you have said. I would have expected it to kind of play out in the way it did and that the goals came later, but I would have thought Brighton would have been able to kind of get themselves over the line, although unfortunately they did not manage to. Guys, thank you very much for a wonderful year of football reviewing. The obvious not so fun part aside, it's been a pleasure. And we will be back in the new year. I think the first round of fixtures is around the 18th of January. So we'll be back at the start of that week to review everything that's happened. But for now, Karen and Scarlett, have a very nice Christmas, if I'm not seeing
You
you.
too.
The Koi King Pod on Off the Ball is brought to you by Cadbury, official snack partner to the Republic of Ireland women's national team. For everyone here on the podcast, we hope you all have a wonderful, safe, happy, and Merry Christmas. And we look forward to chatting to you all again in the new year.
The Koi Gig Pod on Off the Ball in association with Cadbury, official snack partner of the Republic of Ireland women's national team.
Life can throw a lot your way in the morning. You might be battling drop-off times, while your kids are battling imaginary monsters or their shoelaces. But no matter what life brings, Life cereal puts a smile on everyone's face. With 24 grams of whole grains and unexpected sweetness in every serving, it's sure to please even the pickiest eaters. Help start your mornings with Life cereal.
I really love my life.